You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Eusebius Makaiza on 702.
For the curious.
Live.
Online.
Smartphones.
DSTV.
And 92.7.
And 106 FM.
In the last week or so, millions of people have returned to work. However, many industries have not been deemed safe enough to open up as yet. If you work in health and fitness or in the beauty sectors, you probably are still at home, languishing and worrying about where your next meal might be coming from. What we thought we'd do in this radio segment is put the spotlight on these sectors of the economy and ask whether concerns about safety are justified for not yet allowing them to also be operating. I started off my investigation into this conversation by asking someone who owns two sorbet stores in the north of Johannesburg to tell me a little bit about how her business has been affected as a result of COVID-19.
Karen, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. What an opportunity.
Karen, perhaps the first question to ask is, what has been the impact of government's decision that businesses like sorbet cannot open during this time? Literally, what has it done to your business account?
Sure, that's a big question. There's so many things. And I think I'd like to start with the thing that is most important. As you know, our industry employs many people. Both formally and informally, probably hundreds of thousands of people. And it's resulted in those people not having livelihoods, not having income. In my case, personally, I employed 23 people across my two salons. And for the period of lockdown, not only are they not able to earn and generate an income, but they also can't do it, in their personal capacity because it's a criminalized activity. It's not legal. And so the people element, I think, Eusebius, is the thing that really gets to me most. And I think is the thing that probably affects our industry the most at the moment. If you're the owner of a salon or a spa, or a hairdresser, is the fact that we have amazingly talented people working for us who typically have trained and are experts in what they do, but not in anything else. And during this period of lockdown, they have no income. And again, our industry tends to be predominantly female. We employ probably 98% women across the industry. And those women in turn support very extended families and children. And so the impact is not just being felt on those women, but also their immediate and broader families. So it leaves hundreds of thousands of South Africans without an income, which is just absolutely devastating.
I want to take that into two different parts. So the first part is, before we get to the impact on your staff and the multiplier effect on their dependents, just on you literally, to the extent that you are comfortable, if we take the last 3 months, for example, what would have been the impact from a revenue generation point of view on your business if you compare it to the same period either in the previous 3 months or the same period, let's say last year, for example?
Yeah, well, the reality is during lockdown, we are generating virtually zero. Government is allowing us to trade retail products. The reality, though, is that for many salons, especially those of us in the more formal, higher-end shopping centers, as soon as you open your doors, you're liable for your rent. And the kind of retail business product sales that we would do right now would not cover the rent. So if I think back, I think what makes the COVID experience for us probably even worse is the timing. And don't get me wrong, there's never good timing for a pandemic. But January, February are typically our quietest months in the industry. Everybody's come back from holidays. Everybody's feeding the pinch in January, paying the school fees, all of that kind of stuff. So our January and February as an industry is typically two of the quietest months of the year. And so we've come off a quiet period with limited revenue. And then to boot, when March happens, which is normally a boom month for us, it's one of our strongest months in the industry because people have come out of the economic slump or the financial slump in the first 2 months of the year, and they're back to spending, and they, you know, whatever they bought for themselves in December has run out, and it's time to replenish. So it's always a good time for us. So obviously, even prior to lockdown with social distancing, you can imagine that our March, you know, although the first week of March looked fantastic across certainly our business, the rest of March really petered out to virtually nothing as many companies allowed their employees to work from home and there was no need to leave the home. So I think it's sort of a double whammy. It didn't come off the back of a boom in October, November, December. And, you know,
in terms of feasibility, I mean, how much longer would you able to still be a business during that time, for example, when it comes to both the shopping centers where your two businesses are located? Did you get a holiday on your rent payments, a discount on them?
Yeah, I will say my two centers have come to the party, which has been incredibly helpful. And I think it's because they recognize that these businesses bring foot traffic into the center that otherwise might not. So it's spa and salon and hairdressers are really the kinds of services businesses that you want, especially when retail, the sale of products, as we know it, is moving online. So, you know, you can't cut hair over Zoom. So it forces people into the shopping centers. And so the landlords have come to the party, but I can share many, many examples of other salons that have received zero rental reprieve during the period and are very likely to not open their doors again because they simply wouldn't be able to afford it. So, you know, 3 months worth of full rental, full cost, excluding salaries, and then to open with that as a massive deferred payment. The tsunami hits you on the first day that you open, which I think is going to see, you know, and the speculation in our industry from the bodies and the union is that we're probably going to see 40% of the industry close as a result of this. Either won't reopen their doors or will close within weeks because the costs will just come flying in as soon as the doors open. 23 amazing people, you know, many, many South Africans, some foreign nationals, women, male barbers, lady barbers, who are particularly good at their jobs, I will say, to all of those non-believers, women are good barbers. And the ladies and the gentlemen, either many single mothers, many dads supporting families, and again, extended families, not just kids and wives or girlfriends or, you know, but also brothers and sisters and dads and mothers. I am incredibly blessed, and I've always said that I have 23 of the most amazing people that I get to spend my time with 5 or 6 days a week. So I have to get one day off at least because I've got a 5-year-old at home as well. But it is such a blessing for me because they are incredibly genuine, incredibly proud of the work that they do, incredibly committed, not just to the brand, but also to our guests. I mean, that's what we refer to our clients as because they really are guests in our environment. And they will move heaven and earth for those people. So I was in the fortunate position where I could, in April, pay the full salaries at the end of March, paid full salaries. Many, many salons weren't able to do that because March was such a terrible month. I was also able to, in April, pay the commissions that the team had earned in March, as well as some staff loans in the face of the UIF tourist funding becoming available. I will say that today, literally as we speak, only 8 of my 23 people have received their TERS funding for April. So, you know, we're now starting in June. No sight of the rest of the team, no sight of what happens in May. And so TERS, and don't get me wrong, I don't envy the UIF people. I spent 20 years in IT before I went into the salon business, which I know is a radical departure, but you know, the reliance on technology and the sheer enormity of this project that has to is just it's insane. And most companies with lots of money wouldn't even attempt to try and
so Karen, let's try and put an approximate figure on it, right? If we take, let's say, roughly speaking, just 1 month, let's take the worst month, which would have been May. The normal wage bill, and let's put on top of that tips that they might also get from loyal or appreciative customers, That is the total amount of money that would normally go to your 20-odd staff members. If you had to guess, whatever that number typically would have been in the last year, by what percentage would it have shrunk in the month of May?
I would say that they are probably getting about 10%, 10% of what they would normally earn. And you can't live off that.
That's heartbreaking.
And as I say, you know, already knowing that some of my employees, some of my citizens, are, which, what we call them, are facing eviction. Now, having sent horrible threatening letters to landlords to try and secure the premises for them. But, you know, you can't guarantee it for them. So it's not just a case of food and sustenance. It is also accommodation. Where do I live? Where do I live?
The other devil's advocate argument someone might have, and I think there's an easy response, but let's complete the circle, might be to say, you're right, Karen. Government was stupid to allow places of worship to open, but we need to minimize the number of stupid decisions it takes.
Yeah, I guess, and I agree, because I've always maintained I'm very glad I'm not in the president's shoes, right? Because damned if you do, damned if you don't. You're never going to make everybody happy. But I think we have to again look back and say, where is employment? Where are we helping our people get out of destitution? And where are we pushing them into the ditch? And if I look at the number of people employed in our industry, and I think our industry in many cases is less formalized, which probably doesn't count in our favor, and I think doesn't strengthen our position with government. But if we look at how many people this industry employs and are people who are indirect beneficiaries of this industry, I question the decision to not move our industry higher up on the list. Level one, where's level one? September, October? If we're already speculating that 40% of our industry, I mean, we're already speculating that we'll see 40% closure today. If we had to open today, 40% would not open. Imagine if we were looking at a September, October. That's probably 90%.
Lastly, Karen, even what you have just said, that if government engaged you properly, you've got an answer to the question of safety, that if government understood you properly, they would know that your industry doesn't exist for and by middle-class business elite for middle-class business persons. What do you want to say to the Minister of Trade and Industry, Minister Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, the President himself, and everyone else in Cabinet, should they be tuning in right now or catch wind of this as a podcast?
Come and visit my salon and come see, because paper does not do it justice. Come and see how we do it. Come and visit. I'd love to have you. Come and understand the standard operating protocols that we operate under as an industry, and come and experience it, because you cannot understand without that experience yourself. And we would love to have you see, because we have nothing to hide and we have full confidence in our ability to make this work. And also, please meet the people who are so proud and so passionate in what they do, who might not have any other opportunities out there, because this is all they can do. And they're really good at it. Absolutely. And there aren't going to be a whole bunch of other jobs for them after this.
Absolutely.
Eusebius Makaiser
on 702
for the curious.
But Karen is not the only person that I spoke to. I think there's often an assumption, I could be wrong, that when we talk about health and fitness and the beauty industry in general, that these are primarily white woman or white person dominated industries. The reality is that, for starters, as you would have heard Karen explain, many of her staff members come from all walks of life, but also there are some black women that are important parts of this conversation who are also owners of businesses that have been affected, as you will hear in the conversation that I had with one such woman.
Someone who's been in this space for almost a decade at least, Felicia Ntisa.
My journey started in 2011, in Feb to be precise. I started with a nail bar in Hyde Park and head off from a girl from Mdeni in Soweto. And that was 9 years ago. And later that year, Ian Fair afforded me an opportunity to have the second nail bar in Bryanston Shopping Center, and that was the same year. And in 2018, I opened a Sobeman in Hyde Park.
And how many people before lockdown, so let's say towards the end of last year, have you been employing? How many families are entrusted to your care?
42 individuals. And as you know, if we're conservative about it, we'd say 1 times 4. So yeah, it's 42 times 4 families affected.
Now, before you and I spoke formally, we just caught up for a couple of minutes, and you were exactly as the first time I'd met you, very bubbly, very convivial. But how so? Because the beauty industry has been infected enormously. I mean, how is your bottom line, just from a revenue stream point of view, how has your business been affected over the last 2-3 months?
It's 0.0, no income, none whatsoever. Yet you still have your standing obligations. You know, you, even though the landlords can be generous and say no rental, but there are operational costs. They are your standard insurance costs, your standard, your system costs. So the costs are still there. And over and above that, you're also saying, how do these people live who are mainly being paid on commission? So how do I share my little pennies with them? So it's been real.
The operational cost is quite interesting. I've been wondering whether you have managed to get a sort of rent holiday or even a discount from any of the malls like Hyde Park, for example. Tell us about that. And when you say over and above that, there are other consistent costs that don't go away. What are those costs? Yeah.
Remember that you still have your telephone because you can't cut it just because there's COVID. Mm-hmm. You still have your internet cost. You still have stock in the store. So there's insurance cost that needs to be paid. Mm-hmm. There's water rental. There's subscriptions for DSTV that at least I managed to close off. I canceled the subscription for magazines. You know, so there are those little costs that they add up, particularly if you've got 0.0, no income. It's been very difficult. It's weird because this morning I had a Zoom call with my therapist because I keep them going. You know, we've got some training sessions. And I was actually emotional because I don't sleep, Eusebius, because you ask yourself, if I am battling and I'm privileged, I would say, how about them?
Yeah.
You know, where do they get bread on a daily basis? How do they look at that child on a daily basis? So it's been an emotional journey for me. I'm anxious almost every day. Yet at the same time, I've got to come back and say, you've got 3 boats that you need to save. So you need to be sober and almost make decisions that will rather save the business than just for now, because then we can all feed from it later.
What is the contractual relationship been with you and your staff? Where did you have to retrench? Did you have to lay off? Were there contracts that came to an end that couldn't be renewed? Literally, what were the legal implications for your legal relationship with your staff over the last couple of months?
You see, I had options. I had to temporarily lay off, or you do salary reductions, or you retrench. And fortunately, they are in the commission-based setup. So the bulk of their work comes from you coming into our store. That's why it's imperative for you to come into our store. And therefore, I said to myself, the best choice is to pay them what we call a threshold. It's almost a basic that you need to pay them, because at least they can keep the wolf away from the door. Mm. And because retention for me is the last thing ever. Even when we come back, I said to myself, let's do shifts so that each person can at least get something versus you retrenching and almost one family back into poverty, because that's the reality.
How have many of your staff members managed to survive in the absence of commission or tips?
It's very difficult. As you know, tips is almost what they use for transportation, what they use to buy bread on a daily basis. And now they don't have tips. They don't have their own money. So it's pretty difficult. But I put it into context for them. And I said to them, it's one time where I won't have your back. It's one time where I won't be able to support you should you get caught. So weigh the options. Let's suffer for now But let's come back in a bang where we know that, okay, let's, that's why I keep on doing the trainings for them, just to keep their minds busy. Because if they get caught doing, because it's illegal from the SOBI point of view to be going to do that, because there are hygiene protocols that needs to be followed. There are just so many things that needs to be followed. And I encourage them not to go and do guests at their own homes, but rather let's endure, as the president said, just a bit more until we come back.
That's quite a tough choice to give them, but it's keeping it real. In a sense, yeah. We could sell the existing ornaments, all have something to eat in the short term, but yeah. March, there's no business to employ you.
Absolutely.
Or we can suffer now, try and make ends meet somehow. And if, fingers crossed, we all survive, we can continue to try and have a sustainable business later. That's a really horrible choice, isn't it?
It's a horrible choice. And I said to them, hashtag, we are in this together. So I said to them, let's all think, let's all have one objective, is to save the store. Because once our eyes are there, then we make sacrifices. Because we know that as we make sacrifices now, in the long term, they will benefit us. The one thing that those reliefs don't tell you is that it's a loan. And again, what I said to them, I said, you will get the $7.50 a week, which looks exciting because you can buy bread, Bripack, milk, cornflakes, and all of that. But it's a loan. So you get $11,500, which is a loan that you need to somehow pay back. And the reality is our industry will never be the same ever again for a very long time because of social distancing. So that means my income is going to be almost halved if I'm lucky. But that means that income will be halved as well. So let's make choices of not getting lots and lots of debt and rather hold on and know that whatever cent we get, we live from it versus paying back. Because those reliefs you pay back.
I totally hear you. Felicia, it sounds
not,
to me
it's
like,
not a donation.
Yeah, the most important thing is that you need to start getting feet through the door again.
Yeah.
Your staff need
That's
to come and
need.
Work. And you need me to come and ask you to make me look more presentable again.
That's all we need.
But you've
All we're asking is that it's open for people to come. And rather crucify me on not following the hygiene protocols, which, by the by, has been part of our DNA as SOBI. So rather crucify me for that, but do not take bread off the table.
Address the issue for me head on. If a government minister is listening, maybe small business development or minister of traditional affairs and corporate governance or whoever might be listening, trade and industry, the president himself, if a key reason why they have indexed your sector of the economy against lockdown level one is a fear around safety, at what level do you think your sector of the economy should be permitted to do business? And how do you meet safety concerns?
Immediately. Because we are far better than every other industry that has opened. And I'll tell you why. Because for us, this is part of our offering anyway. We will obviously enhance it for COVID. We will do social distancing for COVID, but it's our second nature. So you can never doubt that we will uphold the hygiene protocols. So they need to open us immediately.
Alicia, you've been absolutely stunning. I am beginning to be persuaded. I went from being indifferent on this matter and just probing it journalistically to actually thinking that although the fears are intuitively justified, upon reflection, when you speak to the experts like yourself and your counterparts across the industry, that government should actually engage you instead of making assumptions.
No.
Live.
Transform.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
The most fundamental objection to opening up these sectors of the economy is that it's not safe to do so right now. How do you practice social distancing? Both Felicia and Karen, during the course of my conversations with the two of them, resisted the idea that they cannot guarantee reasonable amounts of safety. Let's have a listen to how each of them addressed this concern.
I would rather take my five-year-old to my salon than I would take him to a hospital at the moment, because I know what I can see in a salon compared to a hospital. And The reality is that, you know, as we look at the standard operating protocols that have been set in place for our industry, not only does every employee get temperature checked every couple of hours, not only do they change their gloves after every treatment, wash their hands with soap and water, not just rely on a sanitizer, wash their hands with soap and water, change gloves every time, change the mask repeatedly during the day. We expect our guest, our client, to wear his mask throughout the treatment. In the case of manicures and pedicures, there are screens that not only protect the guest from the barber or the therapist, but also from any other guest. We practice social distancing, the spaces we're leaving between manicure, pedicure, barber chairs, and so forth is well beyond what government is recommending from a social distancing perspective. And we
are you telling me, Karen, that before lockdown, many of the things that are now being mandated in the rest of the economy were at any rate standard operating procedure in salons?
100%. And in fact, we're adding a few things. We're adding a few of the physical protections, the screens, for an example, mm-hmm. but the sterilant, the masks, the gloves, the sterilizing of equipment, UV lights, high alcohol sterilants, isopropylene, et cetera, have always been there. It's the nature of our industry. You know, one of our biggest risks to our industry is the risk of reputational damage because of infection, right? Whether it be a nail infection or a scalp infection, it's always been a risk in our industry as a whole. And therefore, hygiene practices, when a therapist or a barber goes to college to go and learn how to do this, a very, very big part of their time is spent on hygiene sterilization protocols. And as a salon owner myself, that is the thing that we drill into everybody from the front desk, the lady who makes the booking, answers the phone, swipes the credit card, to the salon assistant who uses, bleach to wash cups and saucers when a guest has a cup of coffee.
I have to say, just anecdotally speaking, not only having used your business at Morningside Shopping Center, but always, because I'm not very faithful, using other places as well every other month, depending on convenience, I've always been subject to that kind of safety. I think you spot on. It raises a speculative question that you do not need to answer on their behalf, but let's push the envelope, because that's what the Eusebius Makaiser Show does.
Of course.
Why on earth would government then be evidence insensitive? I just don't get it. I mean, if I had to be nice on their behalf, anecdotally, I don't know if there's robust data, but I know what they might say anecdotally. Here's an article, Eusebius, from the New York Times that showed how this particular outbreak in this city resulted from one hairstylist that serially saw her clients and she became a vector. How do you respond to the fact that there are anecdotal reports? I could probably, with a quick desktop search, Karen, find you 10 mm-hmm. articles of 10 outbreaks that started at salons.
Yeah, and you know, I would say two things. Firstly, I'm sure we would find anecdotal evidence of those kinds of outbreaks at the pharmacy, at the grocery shop, at the wellness center,
yeah.
at the liquor store.
Yes.
And I think we see many pieces of evidence that demonstrates that mass infection happens in church environments and in religious environments, and yet those are open.
From our situation, the good thing is that's the beauty of being a franchise. Because being a franchise, it comes with all those regulations, with those hygiene protocols. Anyway, as I said, even before COVID, they were in. But now our guys will be wearing masks. Number one, we're going to open with smaller teams. So the bars that you used to see at all our stores, you'll probably miss for a very long time because we're going to have to do smaller teams. They'll all be wearing masks, gloves for every treatment, sanitizing as you come in, temperatures, all the beauty that comes with this COVID, if you want, we will be doing that. But social distancing is probably one of the most important things that we will be taking in as probably our, again, our DNA.
No, live. Transform.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
Of course, this conversation isn't only about the business owners. It is also about the employees who work for them. These are men and women who often are responsible, not just for their immediate families, but also who have to send remittances home from the meager salaries that they make. Many of them rely on tips from their regular clients to supplement a very basic income. And I thought that it was incredibly important to also reach out to and find out the stories of how they have been impacted, the staff members, that is, who work within these industries. There are three such persons that I want to introduce you to. Two of them are barbers, and the third is a beautician that has been massively impacted as a result of a lack of activity, even during lockdown level 3. Here are their stories in their own voices.
The lockdown has affected me very badly. I am sitting at home with my kind of work. No work, no pay. It's not like I expect my boss to pay me because, I mean, if you didn't come to the spa to bring in money, where is he going to get money to pay me? So I have to work in order for me to make my salary. They did apply for UIF for us, but the UIF pays you not even half of your salary. So you lack, let's say you were earning 18,000, for an example, right? So the UIF would pay you something like 5,000 rand. So now you have to live from 18 to 5,000. Which account are you going to pay? What are you going to leave out, you know? And then is it safe to actually be going back to work? You know, because with our type of work, we touch people. And like, for an example, if a person is coming to do a facial, then I have to touch her face. You know, it's like I'm on their face, So that can never be safe. But something like a pedicure, I think it's doable. I mean, you can wear your gloves and your mask. But things like facial and massage, because then you're touching the body, I think that can't be safe. But the other stuff, I believe that like your pedicure, it's fine. We can do that because you're just doing your feet and you're sitting a little bit further from me. Obviously, you will be wearing your mask. And yeah, but there will be no social distancing. So I think it becomes a challenge within our industry. Really, it's a challenge. But what can we do? I mean, we just have to hang in there until we get to, I think the government wants us to get to level 1, right? So we will be staying at home and just not paying all our debts. We're just like in debt, you know, and then most of the times you're like avoiding people calling you. Why didn't you pay your account? And you're trying to explain this, you know what, it's actually not nice, but what can you do? It's beyond our control.
A lot of people do disagree that the beauty industry should not open its doors anytime soon now, but from my personal point of view, that works in a barber shop as a barber that has gone on training, on hygiene training, on how to sterilize my equipment and station before and after every use, that we should open our doors now, because it's not fair that the industry has to suffer this long while we have gone on training, and that we can add to our training the screening and wearing of masks and gloves when rendering a service unto a guest.
This thing of sitting at home, guys, is not good, man. This lockdown is a problem for us, you know, a big problem. We don't get income. Every time here, yeah, we just wake up and sleep and doing that, everything. So, lockdown. So I know which the government is the best for people. But at the end, lockdown, guys, is not good at all. It's not good at all. So we try to live, but it's not good because there's no income. I'm a hairdresser, I mean, I understand. So, yeah, the hairdresser is still closed. There's nothing I do so far. So I try to make house call. See, house call, people, they're so scared to do that. So there's no income. I can't pay my rent. I can't do anything, I mean, understand. Since I locked, I'm like this. So I hope government can do something for us, especially those people, hairdressers, so they can open this up. Because I couldn't say that I fail. I couldn't say that I'm failing. So All
right, now listen up. Give me one and your joint won't be no problem.
Hey, just leave the boys alone. Sit down.
An extraordinary day at the barbershop.
I need a cut. A little off the top, long in the back, but not quite no shag. Slope to the left like Gumby. Eddie Monster in the front, a little Wyclef on the right. Come on, hook that up for me.
From MGM Pictures and the producers of Soul Food and Men of Honor.
Hey, hey! Ah, my finger!
You want to know how I really feel about you? Just think about that baby face song.
Which one?
You ain't there, Della. All of them, baby.
If you don't pay the property taxes, the bank is going to foreclose on the shop.
I made your father the same offer, but you're a better businessman.
I have to confess that while we were doing research for this particular segment, I couldn't help but think back to the barbershop, because the reality is that the beauty industry doesn't matter only to us because we want to look less disheveled than we currently do. The barbershop is also important as a place where we go to escape, to hang out. And that is why the men and the women who work in the industries that you've heard from in this segment of the show, they are also the keepers of secret. So what's really interesting to me is reflections about the social place that hair salons and the nail bars and barbershops have in our lives. And in fact, Felicia, that I had spoken to a little bit earlier that you had heard from, had reflected on the social importance of the beauty industry beyond just the function of cutting your hair or having your nails done. It is a very important place socially that many of us go to because we find refuge away from the rest of our lives.
Hey, y'all, look at this lady.
Hey! Oh, man, what kind of car is it, man?
Camry.
Oh, man, now that's a good car. I got one of them. I just bought one.
Can you imagine a society in which we live 5, 10, 15 years from now where I clip my own toenails?
Yeah, we head in there. We head in there. I think probably with, but what COVID-19 has shown us, given the number of WhatsApp messages I get and given the number of calls I get, is that actually it's an essential. You know, it is an essential. So I think 20 years, no, I think probably in the next whatever, but not definitely not. You'll still need somebody who look after your grooming, because grooming boosts your confidence. It's actually great psychologically.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, this is all speculative, right? And I'm cheating because I'm asking a question that is analogous to a really interesting article I'd read about the restaurant industry. I love eating out. That came to an abrupt halt. And what I have found, and I'm not sure if it's temporary, I was saying to my partner, the quality of food I've been ordering from restaurants via Uber Eats, it's so poor. And either my taste buds have been completely reset, or because there isn't fresh produce available, you're perfect, suppliers aren't available, maybe everyone is just trying to get rid of old stock, or they just don't have the best people giving them that they usually rely on. But there's a part of me that's secretly excited that my palate is rejecting it, because A, it's going to be a saving in my pocket if it becomes a permanent rejection, and B, I might have to learn how to cook properly like my partner does.
Yes. Or you might be missing the experience. Because remember, sometimes you don't come to us just for your haircut or for your pedicure.
That's true.
It's that feeling. It's that feeling. You might be missing the experience of sitting outside and of just looking at people while you're eating. You might be missing that.
That's a critical part of the salon experience.
I'm probably missing the experience.
So maybe speak to that, especially to government that's listening. There's two last questions I want you to touch on. You've opened up one that I think deserves its own radio show. Going to the salon is not only about grooming, it's about much more than that, which is why films like Barbershop in the US have done so phenomenally well commercially, because we all recognize it as an incredible space. I mean, when black men are together in a barbershop, for example, magical things happen. There's little chance of a racist white cop lynching you, and you can speak freely, you can be completely at home. Yeah. Similarly, if you're a woman,
it's a safe space.
I mean, your staff members must be the keepers of the most amazing secrets.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you see it even now, the number of people who reached out to me to say, Felicia, can we access your stuff? You know, I've been with Sarah for 9 years. I've been with Pamela for 8 years. I've been with Jack. You know, so there are so many people who are like, how can I assist? How can I do that? Because it's such a personal relationship.
Mm.
You know, because you actually almost share what you don't even share with your partners, with your nail technician.
Absolutely.
Or with your baba, yeah.
Mm.
No, live, transform.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
In the final analysis, whether or not one opens up these industries is a question of risk-taking. And your appetite for risk in terms of your personality profile will probably determine whether or not you have sympathy for the folks you've heard from in this radio segment and agree that we should be opening up the beauty industries. Alternatively, if you are highly risk averse, you might say, notwithstanding the guarantees that certain measures can be taken, that nevertheless, only at lockdown level one should we even think of opening up this sector of the economy. Where should you position yourself? You be the judge.